Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Technology Uncorked. My name is Jeff Quattromani, and this show is brought to you by Navman. Now, I've spoken about this particular dash cam for a number of episodes now. It's been living in my car, strapped to the windshield and paying attention to everything that's going on in front and behind me. And just the other day, I started going back to the office. I went back in, so I'm driving back on motorways again. I'm noticing how bad some of the drivers are out there. They have not improved. COVID has not helped people's driving skills. If anything, it's made them worse. However, I noticed that during sunset, I thought this would be an interesting one. I had the sun right in my eyes. I could barely see. I had the visor down, I had the glasses on, very bright. I was wondering how the dash cam was coping in that situation. And looking at the actual screen of the dash cam, I could get an indication of what was going on, but not very much. But so I took it home. I had a look at the footage afterwards. And what was really nice to see is that even though, yes, you could see very clearly that there was a sun blaring right at the camera's face, the camera was still able to easily detect and for me to easily read the number plates of the cars that were in and around my area, which was amazing to see. With the sun in my eyes, that would have been very difficult in a normal situation. But with the dash cam, it was still able to handle that direct light into the lens and still capture enough detail that I could identify number plates. Who knows what could happen on the road? People do tend to run away from situations at times. So having that record on camera is extremely important. The one that I'm using is the MyView 1100 Sensor XL. It's a dual camera model, $449 recommended retail. I always encourage you to shop around, do some price comparisons, and make sure you haggle at the store. But do check out the full range at navman.com.au. And again, another good reason why a dash cam can sometimes see more than the human eye. Whether you're in the car, or you've got a passenger, or any other eyewitness, sometimes a camera is the best version. Now, if you're somebody like me who woke up at 2:50 a.m. this morning to catch the Apple event, you'll probably have no surprise as to what I have in my glass today. I'm drinking a coffee. It's a double espresso, and I seriously need it. Look, not to say that the event was boring, but because a 3 a.m. wake up is not ideal, especially when most of my evenings usually finish at around midnight. I tend to get in bed around midnight, so I usually get my 5 hours. This morning was 3. Not ideal. Now, obviously, what we're going to talk about based on that introduction is Apple. I am really sorry to anybody who has no interest in what Apple announced today. You may need to skip this whole episode. That's just the way it is. And I won't be offended by that. I'll accept your decision and you can move on. Thank you for coming. I'll speak to you next week. Now, Apple announced a large range of things. In fact, the first half an hour of the actual event must have seen maybe 6 or so different products spoken about or announced. So it was really cool that, you know, in this new era that we have these virtual events and everything is so, you know, produced and so filmed and advanced and edited and made sure it's all concise and things like that, there's no babble. There's no one walking up and down a stage. There's no one hyping up a crowd. There's no one waiting for the crowd to stop clapping before they continue to talk. They just keep going. So it is a nice event, and it's one of those things that, you know, it still has a special feeling to it. Waking up to watch an Apple event still feels good. Last year, I spoke very much about the fact that they didn't have a lot to discuss half the time. Sometimes it was one product and you spent, you know, your 3 a.m. wake up on that. So let's go through a number of things. We're going to talk about there's a new iPhone coming. There is a new iPad. There is a new Apple TV. There is a new iMac. There are a new thing called AirTags. And there's also going to be a paid podcast model being launched as well. So we're going to get into all of those things. I'm going to run through all of the details. And for anybody in Australia, I will be mentioning Australian pricing. For those outside of Australia, go to your Apple website and you can find out prices there. Release dates all seem to be pretty much the same. So when I do say one, it usually applies to all. So we are going to go through every single piece of the announcements and run through them. And obviously, you're going to get my opinion on those as well. As much as Apple doesn't always appreciate my opinion on some of these things, that's just the way it is. I care about your dollar more than anything else. And we're going to make sure you get a full information download so you can make the right purchasing decision when these things either go on pre-sale or when you see them in store. Let's get to it. Now, there was one product that was mentioned up front, which I'm not going to talk about too much, but effectively, Apple have a credit card. It's called the Apple Card. And it was interesting that Tim Cook opened the entire briefing with comments around the Apple Card and how they're going to make it more easily accessible for more people in a family, whether it's partners or even your children, to use the Apple Card and effectively build up your credit score and things like that. But, you know, it's interesting to talk about credit cards just as you're about to announce many, many products that require probably a pretty sizable credit card. So interesting way for Apple to kick that off, I thought. I mean, it could have been halfway in between. I don't know. It could have been an email, to be honest. It wasn't that exciting. The other thing that absolutely could have been an email, and I was surprised this even took up more than 10 seconds of time, there is a new iPhone coming. And it's not new hardware. It's a new color. So if you've been resisting an iPhone 12 because, damn it, they hadn't made one in purple yet, well, purple's coming. If you are hoping for a purple iPhone 12 Pro, you'll still be upset. It's only going to be on the iPhone 12 and the 12 mini. You can now get it in a purple. That's the news headline. And again, that probably could have been an email. One that was interesting that they talked about early on as well was podcasts. And obviously, Apple realistically did start podcasts. I mean, it would be impossible for any other brand or company to say that podcasts is their bread and butter. But, you know, Apple kicked this thing off. And their next step around the podcast journey is to allow people to subscribe, which I tell people to do already. But subscribing has taken a different term now. And if you think about subscription services, Apple wants to make podcasts a subscription service. Again, leaving it into the hands of the creator, as in myself, to decide whether I want my podcast to be a subscription service. And what does that mean? Well, it would effectively mean that rather than you hearing my Navman sponsorship announcement at the start of the show, imagine if I could have that option. But what if I had an option where it removed that sponsorship announcement and you just got from the music perhaps onwards, and I charged you for that? Would you pay money for that? Would you pay $1 a month? Would you pay $5 a month? Would you pay 10? I don't know. But this is what Apple is trying to help unpack. They want to help podcasters make money by offering a premium ad-free version of the podcast. Now, I think there are some podcasts out there which are verging on ebooks or almost like a TV series in audio format. And perhaps for them, this will make sense that if they have been bothering people listening who are trying to get through chapter after chapter without having an ad break or anything like that, maybe this would be their cup of tea. In my opinion, this podcast isn't something I want listeners to pay for. I don't feel that it should work that way. I only talk about products that I want to talk about, and I'm only sponsored by companies that I believe in. And that's a genuine statement. I have turned down, Manscaped.com, the ones that sell the electric razors. I mean, I'm a hairy animal. That's just something I cannot promote in good faith and if people know what I look like. So I only talk about products that I absolutely believe in. And as a result, they help me pay for my time to do this podcast. Why should you have to pay for it? I don't know. It's my philosophy. I think it will be interesting to see how other podcast platforms go about handling this. Will you find other podcasts go and do this? Especially if I think about people who do podcasts similar to myself. I think there are some out there, especially a couple of Australian ones, that if they went down the route of having no ads or no paid commentary, they may not have much of a podcast to talk about. It might just be a little bit of banter as they talk amongst themselves. But beyond that, that may be the episode in its entirety. So I think there are some podcasters who make a lot of money through sponsorships and advertorials, and that's good for them. Whether I want listeners to pay for that, I just don't think so. Always interested in your feedback on that one if you would like to share it. By the way, you can SMS me 0467-439-078. Throughout the show, while you're listening to this, pull your phone out, send me a text. What do you love? What do you hate? What are you going to buy? What do you wish somebody else did first? Now, one we've spoken about quite a bit are the AirTags. We have spoken about this as a rumor, what feels like 24 months. It feels like it's been a very, very long time coming. But I'm really glad that they finally did this. They didn't make much of a song and dance in terms of building up for this. They just came out and said it. AirTags are coming, and it works with the Find My network. For those who don't know, an AirTag is very similar to a Tile. And for those who don't know what a Tile is, it's a Bluetooth tracker. It's a small piece of plastic that has some chips and a battery inside, and it connects to your phone. The tracker itself only has Bluetooth. It does not have a GPS component inside, so it isn't tracking the tag. It's using Bluetooth. And when the Bluetooth connects to your phone, it uses the phone's GPS to know exactly where the tag is. If you walk away from the device and you leave the tag sitting where it is, then it only knows its last known location because where the phone was last connected to it. So if you lose the tag entirely and you go back to its last known location and it's not there, you can actually even choose to ring it. And you can, if you're close enough, it will ring the Bluetooth tracker. With the AirTag, it will also tell you in which direction it is. So if you cannot hear it ringing, it will say, walk this way, and literally have an arrow on the screen of which direction to be walking as you're getting hotter or colder to the tag, and hopefully you'll hear it and easily find it at that point, but it will literally help you pinpoint the AirTag in its entirety. But if you cannot find it and you mark it as lost, and this applies to Tile as much as it applies to AirTag. So if you mark this as lost, let's use the Tile example first. If you mark a Tile as lost, then anybody else who uses the Tile ecosystem becomes silently aware of your lost tag. And then say, for example, you have a Tile, you've lost it, you've marked it as lost. I have the Tile app on my phone. Perhaps I walk past it or near your lost item. My phone will identify it, will locate it via GPS, and it will share that with Tile. I won't know that that's gone on in the background, but the person who's lost their tag will now get a notification to say that it's been found, and they can go hopefully and get it before it goes missing again. With AirTags, the advantage that Apple has is that there isn't necessarily an app beyond the Find My app on every single iPhone and every single iPad or Mac. So imagine this, you lose your AirTag, and now who's looking for your product if you mark it as lost? Anybody who has an iPhone. It could be a 90-year-old person who has never used their iPhone beyond making phone calls who walks past it. They could easily be the one who silently marks your tag as found and you get that location. So the advantage here is it doesn't rely on you having an app like the Tile app to be somebody who's looking for your lost product. This now opens up to anybody who has an iPhone. Unfortunately, not everybody has an iPhone. So for Android users, you're most likely going to lean towards Tile. There's also Chipolo. I know that Samsung have a tag that they are hopefully going to bring to Australia at some point, very similar to the AirTag experience, obviously. Now, let's talk a bit more about the AirTag itself. It's a round little coin. And it's quite small from the looks of things. It looks like the size of a 20-cent coin, probably the thickness of two or three of them. It's water and dust resistant, IP67 rated. It's got the built-in speakers, so it will still do that chirping as I was talking about. Super easy setup. You're essentially going to tap it on the back of your phone, almost like when you open up a pair of AirPods and your phone just goes, oh, AirPods are around. Pretty much the exact same as that in terms of setup. It will be super simple. When you order them, you can get them laser etched with something on the back. And that could be a name, it could be just an emoji, or it could be a symbol, whatever you really want it to be. I don't know how many characters they're going to allow for that, but in my opinion, it'd be really smart if you had a phone number or something simple like that, where if it was found and for whatever reason, maybe they had an Android phone, they could just SMS you and say, hey, found your tag attached to your keys or whatever it is. That would be nice. It's got a 1-year battery life, which is fantastic, and it pretty much puts it in par with most of the simple Tile products. And it also allows you to have them easily replaced. So if the battery dies, you just sort of, it's one of those coin-sized batteries. You just take that out and you stick another one in, and it looks like you'll be able to actually even do that yourself. So that is a really nice thing to see. What's particularly different about the AirTag that I noticed, it actually took a while for me to notice it until I started going into the pricing, is this. Now, first up, how much does the AirTag cost? The AirTag will cost you $45 for one. It'll cost you $149 for four of them. Now, when you look at Tile, how does that compare? Well, Tile do a four-pack. of tags at $110. So Tile is cheaper. The other difference with Tile is you've got a variety of designs and styles. So they have one which looks like a credit card that is perfect for wallets. They have one that looks like a small hockey puck that's really good for skateboards, remote controls, bikes, and things like that. And then they've obviously got the keyring tracker. But let's stick to the keyring one because that's really where the application is for the AirTag. Now with the AirTag, as I said, it's $45 for the one. You could spend far less than that to get the Tile one. The design of the Tile has a small hole in it that allows it to easily go into a keyring. The AirTag is just a coin. So you need to then buy a holder for that AirTag to be attached to keys. Apple will be selling them, and they'll be selling the cheapest model, the cheapest little keyring for your AirTag is one of those poly plastic things, $45. So you're looking at $90 for a AirTag that can now connect to your keys. Belkin came out this morning and immediately said that they'll have a little sort of poly plastic type keyring holder that will be $20. So you're looking at about $65 on keys. If you're interested in getting an AirTag, it's something that you need to remember. You can't just buy the AirTags unless you're just putting it in your pocket or in your backpack or something like that. If you want it attached to something, you need to get the keyring attachment as well. And that's almost as much as the AirTag itself, which is kind of crazy. So that's the AirTags. It'll be available very, very soon. I think it's April 30th. So looking at this at the end of next week, and I cannot wait to actually compare it. I'm tempted to just buy one, buy another Tile, attach them to keys, toss them in the same location, walk away, and see whether a Tile or an Apple person finds it first. I think I know which way it will go, but I'm kind of curious either way. That is the Apple AirTag. Let's now get into Apple TV. Apple TV was a little bit different for me this time, and I was expecting in many ways a new Apple TV product. I didn't really know what they could possibly do to really improve it. I think the way that Apple TV is at the moment, the 4K model, is great. It does all the things that you would need. It's got apps, it's got games, it's got a good remote control. It has pretty much every streaming service on the planet that you would hope to be able to access. And it comes at around $250 or something like that. Yes, it is twice the price of a Chromecast or even a Amazon Fire Stick. But it depends on the ecosystem that you live in and your exact requirements as to why you would buy the Apple TV over the other two. Now, so when they said they were going to have another one, what's it possibly going to have that's going to make me want to replace an Apple TV if you already had one? It's still a 4K model. There is no 8K Apple TV here. And again, I think that makes sense. It's way too early for them to worry about doing that. They are focused on renewables. It's 90% of it is made from recycled something or other. It's kind of carbon neutral, all this sort of stuff. They really push this whole thing around that it's made from recycled products, 100% recycled tin in the solder of the main logic board. Okay. I mean, that's good. That's really good. It doesn't drive a purchase for me. So that's not a thing that I can say, but it's good. Good to know. Good to know, Apple. The big thing here is that the remote control has changed. The remote control has changed slightly. It's kind of gone back to the silver of the older Apple TV days, which is really cool to see. We've also got a scroll wheel at the top now, which effectively allows you to fast forward or rewind just by gliding your finger. Sounds like an iPod Classic, which I really think is very cool. It has a proper back button now instead of the menu button, which kind of gives a bit of a nod back to Android to say, yeah, going back does make sense instead of pushing menu to go back. And they've also added a power button, which is really interesting because it can control your TV's power. So when you want to watch something, you can push that power button and it will control the Apple TV as well as the TV itself, which is fantastic. So nice changes. Yes, you can use Siri to talk into the remote if that's something you want to do. Otherwise, the remote seems to be the biggest update. It's going to be $250 still, $179. I don't know why I have that written in front of me. But the remote is really everything here. The other thing that they talked about, and this will be really dependent on how into your color quality and things like that that you are, but once you have the Apple TV connected, you'll be able to do color configuration of your TV and fine tuning. And you can do that by, through the settings of the Apple TV, it will then ask you to hold up your iPhone to use the cameras on the iPhone to calibrate. So the cameras on the iPhone will talk to the TV, will read the TV colors, and send that information back to the Apple TV to make automatic adjustments to ensure that the content that you're watching is exactly as the maker intended. It's a really cool thing to have. I just don't know how into it people will be. Maybe they'll do it once and hope that they can just never touch it again. And that's how most people probably want to watch TV, is just turn the thing on and watch content, not fine-tune colors every time you turn it on. But again, if you didn't have an Apple TV and this was your first, it's a good one. If you have a 4K Apple TV, I don't think there's a need to upgrade. If you want just the remote, I did see somewhere that they are selling that. I think it's about $50-$60 that you could buy just the remote and then bring that back to your existing Apple TV 4K. I would need to check whether it's compatible with, you know, other versions of that, but I think that's a really cool thing to note. That's really it for Apple TV. I think more importantly, let's talk about iMac, because wow, has it changed. The iMac is now in color. And that has to be the biggest headline for what the new iMac is. The iMac has been gray for quite some time now. I think it's been about 20 years since the big bubble iMac, which had the big color backing, existed. And you had them in a variety of colors. That was also at the time when you had MacBooks, which had a bit of a clamshell design to it, which also had colors on them as well. But now we're back on the desktops to having that feature. And again, a lot of this was rumored, and it's interesting that a lot of the rumors really did come true. And to explain the colors that you can now get your iMac in: green, yellow, orange, red, purple, blue, and you can still get the gray or the silver. The interesting part here is that a lot of the rumored images and things like that that were leaked early suggested it wouldn't have a big chin, that the Apple logo, where it currently sits at the bottom of the screen, would be removed and it would just be all screen and just a thin bezel around it. Not quite the case. So what it looks like is it does look like an iPad. It's definitely as thin. It's 11.5 mil thin. It's a 24-inch display. 4.5K, so it's a really high resolution display. And you still have this bottom chin. The Apple logo is removed. It's still on the back of the device, but instead it looks more like a soundbar. And that particular piece is a slightly dimmer color of the rest of the body. So if you've got a dark blue iMac, it's almost got a light blue, what looks like felt, and I can't wait to actually see this myself, but it looks like a felt or a material at the front underneath the screen. So that's a really nice looking thing. It doesn't say Mac on the front, doesn't even say Apple. It just shows that. The keyboard and mouse also comes color matched. So you can get, you know, your mini keyboard or your full size keyboard, whatever it is, in the same colors. Same thing with the Magic Mouse. It can also come with the same color, which is quite cool. You get this beautiful theme going on. Hopefully you really like that color and you're going to stick with it. Otherwise, obviously you can always mix and match, I'm assuming, with that. One of the really cool things about the keyboard is it's now got Touch ID, which means walking up to your computer, logging in, it's a simple touch of the keyboard and away you go. There's also an emoji button on the keyboard now. So there's been some changes there to really bring in what you do on your iPhone or iPad keyboard and bring that into the Mac. And I say that for a number of reasons, because they've also got this continuity between the computer, the iMac, and your iPhone and iPad. So if your iPhone is sitting next to you and you're working on your Mac and your phone rings, it'll just come up on your iMac. You can answer it there. You can reply to texts there. You can even use apps. So you can run iPhone and iPad apps on your Mac. As simple as that. You want to use Instagram? Don't pick up your phone. Just keep looking at your big 24-inch display and scroll Instagram. Like, interact, do what you like. It's all there. And it will be continuity through your phone. I think continuity, I should have said, all through your phone. So I think that's just really, really neat. Apple has also upgraded the webcam. Heck, we're all working from home. It seems like Apple has really, you know, realized that our at-home machines need to be much better than they were. It's now a 1080p webcam. It used to be 720, which, you know, it was okay for when you were taking fun photos. But if you are joining a meeting, you do want to look your best. And the 1080p camera looks like it will do that. They're also talking about how it's using algorithms to make you look better and to you know, control the background lighting and things like that. So it's really sounding quite positive. The other thing that was interesting, they said 3 microphones in the iMac and it will do beamforming. What's interesting about beamforming is the microphones try and target your voice and not pick up external sounds. So it could be as simple as tapping on the desk, or it could be noise coming from another room, but beamforming is trying to bring in your voice and nothing else. So if you click your pen, hopefully that might not even come through on the meeting sound. Really cool. Listening is now going to come from 6 speakers. They've got spatial audio built in, which they're, you know, I hate it when they use the words Dolby Atmos. when you're talking about a computer that doesn't actually have speakers around you. But here we are, spatial audio. They're saying that it's going to sound immersive, and gaming and things like that will actually sound really great. Fantastic. So all really good things. True tone display, as you'd expect, that if there's different lighting in the room, the display should adjust and make sure it shows the image as you expect it to. Speeds, because this one has the new Apple M1 chip, but they're talking about speeds up to 85% faster from a CPU perspective, up to 2 times faster from a GPU perspective for graphics, and up to 3 times faster when it comes to machine learning. So all of these things bundled together do suggest that you should be able to buy even the base model, new iMac, and it would blow whatever you had out of the water. That's what it would suggest. And look, I'm excited by that. I think this is a beautiful product. It looks stunning. I don't know if desktops are a thing for me yet. I'm still running on laptops with an extended screen and an external keyboard and mouse. That's what works for me. If I had a desktop, it would be just I can't move it around. The good thing about having a desktop is that you can usually get more bang for your buck. And here is where it comes down to it. So you're available in May. You're looking at $1,829 Australian or $2,049. And the reason there's two different variants here, one of them has, I think, 7 GPUs and the other one has 8. So if you want the higher spec model, you need to go for the 8. And I think there are 2 colors, for whatever reason, there are 2 colors in the range that are only available on the up-spec model. So if for whatever reason, I'm going even example, I don't know which one it is exactly, but if you wanted yellow, yellow may only be available in the expensive one and not in the cheaper one. That's just the way it is. It's just Apple's way of thinking. I don't know, but I'm super pumped by this. Oh, one other thing I remember, when they were talking about the integration between, you know, your phone and your iMac, I mentioned calls and texts, but they even said that if you had, say, your Notes app open or a website or something like that on your phone, if you highlighted the text and hit copy, you could go to your Mac and hit paste, meaning you could literally take content just seamlessly, no connections, nothing at all, and just do copy and pasting between them. That is so handy. I mean, there are times where I do want to do something on my computer, and then I go, oh, I want to do that on my phone and see what it looks like on my phone because of the display size or whatever. And you have to go, oh, how am I going to get that link to me, or, you know, whatever it is. It's amazing that you'll be able to do that and have that continuity between them. I think that's just so cool. So that's the iMac. Again, available in May. I think pretty much everything will be available by May. Some things a little bit earlier, as in end of April, just. But it's going to be beautiful. I can't wait to see this one in store. I think I might be the most excited about this. AirTags, yeah, for sure. But then there's one more thing, and it's the iPad Pro. And the iPad Mini didn't get an update, but the iPad Pro, it certainly did. Let's talk about that. Now, I have recently received an iPad Pro. I've been using an iPad Pro, and I actually just use it on the Echelon bike. I just use it to ride because it's a larger screen. I like that larger display. But it certainly has a lot more power than the average iPad, and sometimes you may notice it, depending on what you're actually doing. For me, the iPad Pro has always been a question of why. I mean, yeah, the screen size, that's the biggest advantage. Beyond that, the power and the features that they talk about this thing being able to do, I just don't know who's doing it. And I feel like a lot of people who are buying an iPad Pro, it's simply because they just wanted the bigger screen. I just think that's the case. I don't know a lot of people who, maybe I don't know the right kind of people who would be able to leverage an iPad Pro in the way that Apple thinks that they should, but here we are anyway. There's a new iPad Pro available. If you thought your existing iPad was too slow, or that your apps didn't work very good and you need more power, here we go. The new iPad Pro comes in 2 sizes, still 11-inch and a 12.9-inch. They're still claiming all-day battery life. And the biggest changes that we can talk about is going to be around the display. The display from the 12.9-inch model uses a mini LED. It's liquid retina. It's using XDR. So effectively, all of these bang terms will suggest that this is going to be brighter with better contrast levels, and with such detail in the image that it may blow your mind. Again, one of the things you're going to need to see to believe, to really appreciate the detail and the imagery that can come out of this iPad compared to the previous generation. In terms of power and performance, you can now up-spec this up to 16 gigabytes of memory and up to 2 terabytes of storage. So this could literally be your workhorse. If you can find a way to just do all your work on an iPad, you may never need a laptop based on the amount of power that is in this. It still has 2 cameras on the back, including the LiDAR, which is fantastic if you're using apps that allow you to place furniture in a room or to visualize a room, or even to measure a room. There are apps that allow you to do that, especially when it comes to furniture and interior decorating apps. That's a big space for it. That's all still there. It's got Wi-Fi 6 on board now. So if you are jumping onto a Wi-Fi 6 network, you can make use of those improved speeds. It's now got 5G. That's probably the other big call out. 5G is there. So that's a great thing. It's using the Apple M1 chip as well. Almost no surprises that they would do that. And it should run like crazy. So amazing improvements. Again, it's faster, better, stronger, and all those things. I just need to find someone. And maybe you can help me. Who is using the iPad to their full extent and saying, gosh, if only it was faster? I just think that the previous generation, if it goes on sale, it may be the best option for you, because here we go. The pricing that we have here. If you're happy with the 11-inch, and bear in mind, the 11-inch does not have all the bells and whistles of the 12.9. No iPad Pro is the same. So the 11-inch at its base, $1,199. And the 12.9-inch at its base, $1,649. It costs extra to have the cellular version, which will have the 5G, but these are just the Wi-Fi base model prices. In terms of dimensions, it's 6 millimeters thin. It's incredibly thin, obviously. It still has that square design, just like the previous iPad Pro. And the other thing around the display is I talked about how it's, you know, you've got better contrast and things like that. It is primarily because it's using mini LED. If you heard me talk about the Neo QLED TV from Samsung not long ago, same technology, very much the same technology. So fitting more LEDs into the same space where one LED existed before is effectively what mini LED means. And it just means that you can get greater contrast, greater detail in that image that you're trying to produce. So yes, I expect this to be absolutely amazing and mind-blowing. Yes, the price also should make sure that that's the case, but that's the way it is. It also does come with a case, and it also comes with a case which has a keyboard built in, should you want to use it that way. Again, this could be a laptop replacement for a lot of people. And look, at $1,649, it might actually be an okay price to pay for a laptop replacement too. That's it. That's the iPad Pro. I'm going to wrap it up right there. I'm literally well past the bottom of that coffee cup. It has been a very early morning. I think it was a worthwhile Apple event. And in all the radio spots and things like that I've had to do today discussing it, it's been much more positive this year than last year. And when I can talk about multiple products and not just trying to nitpick out of one, it's a really nice thing. They did do some of the right moves. I think the AirTag was the right thing to do. I think upgrading the iMac was a fantastic move and a real upgrade, a real change, a visual change. I think that's something that people have been looking forward to for quite some time. I'm surprised the iPad mini did not get an update. I think that one should have happened. The Apple TV, while we expected that to be updated, didn't blow us out of the water, didn't really surprise or delight anybody. And the AirPods did not get mentioned at all. I thought maybe the AirPods would, and it's a shame that they didn't. Maybe that'll be at the next event. I mean, how many things were they going to pack into their session after all? The sentiment that I'm seeing online is very positive. I think the biggest thing people are questioning or laughing at is the subscription service for podcasts. And it's an interesting one. It may turn into an interesting debate for a lot of people as to whether people should pay for that. I think the debate is still going on whether people should pay for news content online. You know, not a lot of people still feel like they shouldn't have to pay for that. So how do you convince someone to pay for a podcast if they don't want to pay for written content? It's a really personal thing. And I think it just comes down to the publication and the person doing it and what really drives them to do it in the first place. Tell you what, if this was all about money for me, I would have stopped doing it a long time ago. I can tell you that much. This is absolutely a joy for me to do each and every week, twice a week, but I love hearing back from you guys. I will just remind you, in case you have any feedback on this Apple event, the products that we've been talking about, 0467-439-078. I'd love to hear from you, and I'm happy to read out your text in the next episode. We can talk about that further. And if you have not left a review on Apple Podcasts, the free version, feel free to go ahead and do that. It's always nice to hear from you all and understand where your head's at and the things that you like. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. I'll speak to you again next week. Bye-bye.